Dear friends, in this weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, the great scripture that brings the essence of Vedanta or the science of our experience and science of life in a very practical way without giving up or lowering down the ideal. The poetry is there, and yet intense practicality also is there. The eighth chapter that we have been studying is very important from this point of view, that it discusses the connection that I and the world that we feel. Our whole experience is based on this duality, that I and the world. And yet, there is a connection between them that we experience. I is continuously interacting with what is called world. In fact, that connection and the feeling of these two separate entities as I and the world are so complexly or in a so intricate way merged with one another that it is very difficult where one ends and other begins. It is impossible, in fact, to decide where the I ends and the world begins. So, therefore, this question was raised in the beginning, that what is it that I call I? What is this world of experience? And what is my duty here? What should I be doing? Because, as we saw right in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, that Arjuna was being pulled in different directions. From one point of view, he was thinking this is the right thing he must do. From the other side, he was feeling that no, I should be doing the other thing. And it is very similar to our condition very often, that we are also torn between various aspirations that we have. Sometimes one becomes prominent and then we feel, I must do this. After we had a nice lunch and all, then another aspiration comes up thinking, no, that is not the, this is the right thing I should be doing. By the time it is evening, some third aspiration takes place, becomes prominent and feels that, no, this is the right thing I should be doing. So, what should I be doing? What is my real duty in life? What is the... And these three have been described here as the first part, that is, who am I? Adhyatma. Then, what is this world that I am interacting with that is continuously shifting, changing? That is called, therefore, Adhibhuta. That which changes. And then Adhiyajna, that how to determine what my duty is, what should I be doing in life. And the Lord has given the beautiful answers to all this, that remember, whatever changes is Adhibhuta. It goes on changing, there is no stability about it. So, that cannot be the goal of your life, because whatever changes, whatever shifts, if you keep that as your goal will also be continuously shifting. And so, you can really have no commitment to any goal. So, therefore, your actions will become meaningless. Why meaningless? Because the actions are planned for some achievement in future. See, that is how human beings act. That today I am doing something, I am having my savings, because then I will have that available to me after some time. But in the meantime, the world changes, the shifts take place. Whatever I had saved, I thought that this is a safe investment, and when I retire, it will come back to me, bringing lot of gains. I see all those ads on TV that invest in this, you will live a peaceful life, and nice pictures are shown, and our Paul falls for that. That is what I should be doing. And then the situation changes after a little while, and then the actions that you took while looking at one picture become meaningless in this new picture. Also, your own these perspective changes, not only that the world changes, your own perspective changes. You thought that this is something I should put my money in, this work. This is a great thing that I should be doing. After a while, you feel, no, that is, what is the use in doing that? It is said that, well, they automatically, parents feel that they should invest money in their children. There is a very nice Hindi couplet about it. Poot sapoot to kyon dhan sanchay, poot kapoot to kyon dhan sanchay. That if you keep, say, money for your son, if your son is very good, then don't keep any money for him. He will be earning. He is a good. He will become a good man. So why you should be keeping money for your son? He will do well. If he is a good son, he will do that. And if he is not a good son, then again, why keep money? He will just embezzle everything. So it is in both ways. So one feels that this is what I should be doing. But after a while, the plan changes. But the action has already been taken. So the important thing to see here is that our actions are done with some kind of a commitment. And then when the goal changes, that commitment becomes meaningless. It is like, suppose you are playing soccer and then you are dribbling the ball to score a goal, and suddenly the goal post changes in some other directions. Then now all your efforts, they just are in vain. So therefore, it is, Lord says there, that whatever is changing, kshara bhavaha, that cannot be obviously your goal. You cannot commit yourself to something that is continuously shifting. Then, what is then, therefore, adhiyajna means, what you should be aspiring for or committing to in your life. That is, Lord says, I am that. Because that is the unchanging reality that pervades everything. The waves, by very nature, the wave means change. Rising, growing, becoming bigger, then again starts dropping down, merging with the ocean again. So, there is no permanence in a wave. But of course, this is only an example, don't stretch it too much, because ocean is permanent. When I gave this example at one place, somebody stretched that example and said, but ocean also changes, is it not? In a big picture, there were no oceans like that maybe 5 million years ago. So that is not the context here. On a relative plane, just as an example, see that all these names and forms, they have birth, they come up, they grow, they exist for a time, and then that change gradually, that change comes to a stage where you don't see them anymore. So coming and going. So all that happens in what? That is what the Upanishads call the God. Vedanta says that is the God in or Brahman. You have that beautiful discussion in Taittiriya Upanishad that the disciple goes to the teacher, who happens in that particular case to be his father. So says, please explain me what is Brahman. And the guru tells that, look, where from all these forms come up, where they stay and where they go back, know that to be God or Brahman. So this is an idea given. The teacher gives an idea from what is not known to what is, from what is known to what is not known. A transition of the awareness of the student. What is already known to student, what the student is already aware of, from that student needs to be gradually elevated to what he or she doesn't know. So the world we already know, we are aware of all these names and forms. So the knowledge of God also is to be given in those terms. That you see all these things in the world? Yes, the disciple says, yes, I see all those things. Now see, those things, there is a beginning to them. They begin. Then they grow. They exist. And then they go back. They dissolve. They are no more there. I was asking about a gentleman I knew. And I asked, well, I didn't see him for quite some time. And the person I was talking to told, he is no more. He was there. He was born sometime. There was a birth date on the grave or something. From birth date and death date. That is printed from this time to this time. This person lived. So, where did it spring from? Where it dissolved? Know that to be the Brahman. And the teacher adds one more line there. That tad vijidnyasasva. That is really to be strived for in life. That should be the goal of life. All commitments should be tuned to that. Then only it becomes a fruitful, meaningful commitment. Otherwise that commitment, whatever commitment based on something flimsy, that has really no meaning. And that story that I had alluded to a few times, an incident in Buddha's life, that Buddha attended the marriage of one of his students. And then at the marriage he said, well, first important thing is that all of us, everyone in the world, must get married. There should be no single person in the world. All must get married. He said, all must get married to truth. He said that everybody must get married to truth. Because even the other marriage that you are having, that a man is getting married to a woman, that sanctity of that marriage also depends on whether you are first married to truth or not. Otherwise you may take the vow of marriage till the death does us apart or whatever. But what is the sanctity, where is the sanctity of that if you are not married to truth? First you have to have the commitment for truth, then only the other commitments may have some meaning. Otherwise, well, if you are not committed to truth, other commitments also have no meaning. So therefore, And what is this criterion for truth? That which remains, that which does not go on shifting. So waves shifting always, ocean in this example, relatively permanent. So let us commit to that. That is Vijijnyasasva. That is where you should have your attunement, so that the life becomes meaningful. And then that is making the life meaningful. Everybody wants that our life should become meaningful life. Everyone, right from a very young person to a relatively old senior person, everybody wants to live a meaningful life. And what will make it meaningful? The efforts to realize or experience this ultimate reality in life, that is what is making our living meaningful. Otherwise, it will not have any meaning. If you look back, trying to catch a shadow or trying to hold onto a wave, that is, you will never be able to do that. A waste of efforts, just meaningless. So to make life meaningful, Lord says, and that is what is called yajna there. Yajna, why Lord says that adhiyajna ahamevatra, that I alone am the adhiyajna here, because that should be the purpose of our life. The activities become meaningful if they are tuned to God. If they are not tuned to God, then they lose their meaning. There is no stable substratum to it. My life led for my children. Fine, okay, but the children, they disappear, they go. You cannot really live life for children. It is that you serve them as embodiments of God and be tuned to God. So this is how our activities in the world are to be tuned to God. So, and what happens then? Lord said that to realize me is very simple. To get over this bondage of the world in a way is very simple. How? We saw that in the last class. Just remember that to remember God at the time of death. And then you realize God. Because whatever you think at the time of death, that you become that. It is an exit for you. Whatever exit you take, you get to that point. So, in this journey of life, you have these exits coming. At the time of death, that is an exit. So, what you are thinking at that time, where were you at the time of death? So, you become. And so, if you die, then while thinking about God, then you become God. Very simple, is it not, Sarah? Just right now you don't have to think of God. Right now you can think of many other things. It is only wait till the time of death comes. When the time of death comes, and maybe it will come after 60 years or 70 years or 80 years. Till then, why just waste time in thinking about God? Till then, let me think of about other merriments, other things. And when I am about to die, I will take the name of God and done. It is. Sounds so nice and simple. Lord knows this weakness that we have, and therefore says, Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu, the seventh verse. Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu Mamanu Smara Yudhya Cha. मय्यर्पित मनोबुद्धि मामे वैश्यस्य संशयः.
Therefore, remember me at all times and fight with your mind and intellect devoted to me and shall attain me alone. There is no doubt about this.
It would have been enough to tell that, well, just to think of me at the time of death. But here he says, all the time remember me. Oh my goodness. It is, that was good that just at the time of death I should remember God. I can keep on remembering my wife or my husband or my somebody or my child or grandchild for the so long a time. And at the time of death, remember God. And yes, that was simple. But then Lord says, no, all the time.
Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, all the time remember God.
Why all the time? And fight. Fight means do your duties. Remember God and do your duties all the time. Why so? See, duty is an important thing here. That what is the meaning of duty? That you do something not because you like it, and not because you have some stake in it, and not that it is your preference, but it is something that you have to do. It is because of your commitments you have to do it. That is your duty. So don't get attached in it. The idea of duty, as has been already explained in Bhagavad Gita in many previous chapters, especially 2nd, 3rd and 4th chapter, that keep on doing those works without getting attached to them. Then it becomes your performance of duty. That ma manusmara yudhyacha, keep on fighting. This world is a battlefield in a way. So keep on fighting and keep on remembering the God all the time. And then what will be mayar pita mano buddhi? Thus your mind, mana buddhi means mind, and your intellect, your understanding, all will be then tuned to God. And then there is no doubt you will come to this realization of truth, realization of God. No doubt about it. What was wrong with just taking the name of God at the time of death? The problem is you can never guarantee when you are going to die. Any time the death can just grab you. It is any moment. With it does not always come with a notice that after 15 years or 17 years you will die. And as I was telling in the last class, even if the notices come, we just ignore them, that as if they are not for me. Yes, the hair start turning gray, and we don't pay attention to that. It's a notice, is it not? That, well, the time is kind of approaching. Earlier I could bite and chew nuts very well. Now I have to be cautious. See? So it is, the notice has been sent, but I disregard it. That doesn't matter, you know. It is, so I disregard those notices. And sometimes the death comes without any notice. It is not that you have to be of certain age to die. You can be 103 years old and still active and working. Death may not come to you. And somebody may be just stillborn. Death, even before the so-called birth in the world. It is... So there are so many such varieties. There was an incident not too long ago right here in our Providence that a young man was killed in a car crash was driving to attend the funeral of his father. But while driving, took the car and then could not. He died there on the spot. It is so you'd never know how a person will die. There are many such examples that death can just grab you at any moment, and then at that time you will not think of God. You might be thinking of something else, some other job at hand, that well, what will happen to this and what will happen to that. So many thoughts are coming up. It is not necessary that you will think of God at that time. I probably had told you of this nice incident when one of our one Swami had narrated that as a young boy, as he was thinking of becoming a monk and devoting life for this God realization, many of his relations, even the parents, they were trying to dissuade him that why you want to do it. See, first of all, this religion and other things, they are not to be done and practiced at the young age. It is only at the ripe old age you should do those things. What is the youth is for some other things in life. When at the old age, when your other works are finished, you cannot do them anymore anyway. The energy in your limbs and organs is all gone anyway. Then it's the right time to think about God. So why you want to do it now? And that young man replied, well, I will do as you tell, provided you can give me these two guarantees. First of all, I will live to become old. Can you give me that guarantee that I will survive till I become old? And second, that is more important, that I will retain the same aspiration when I become old. Our desires keep on changing, shifting continuously. So, is there a guarantee for that? And nobody can provide that guarantee. So, that young boy became a monk in our order. So, it is, this is the case, you know, that how, if you do not practice it, it doesn't come at the last minute. It is, if you say that, well, I have read a book on swimming and therefore jump in the ocean, that is probably the last jump you will be taking. So it is not easy, friends, to just at the time of death to think of God. That they tell a story that a old man was about to, you know, last minutes were approaching. The relatives were called to attend and to have the last this thing. So his four children were there, they had a family shop, a grocery shop that they all used to look after. So he called one of them, his name, Jack. Yes, Dad, I am here. Then the other fellow, hi, Tom. Hey, Tom. Yes, Dad, I am here. I'm Tom. Peter. Oh, yes, Dad, I too am here. Paul. Yes, Dad, I too am here. Hey, all four are you here? Then who is managing the cash there? So, even at the time of death, he could not forget that. God, you know, far cry to think of God. Unless you are tuned to do that, unless you have practiced it continuously, it doesn't come. It is not easy to think of God at the time of death. At the death, if you are conscious at that time, see, so many emotions will be competing with each other to get the preference. It is, and then God, if you have not put it on a priority list at the top, then forget it. It is not easy. Therefore, that rule works. You know that whatever the thought is uppermost at the time of death, you take the next birth accordingly. So, since it is very rare that people think of God, very rarely somebody gets liberated. As that beautiful Bengali song says, that Divine Mother is flying the kites. So many kites are flying in the sky, and she is holding them with her all hands. And then rarely one of them gets cut, becomes free, so to say. And then, oh mother, you start clapping your hands that, wow, somebody got liberated. So it is like that. Otherwise, well, we fly here and there tied. So that is the difference between this spiritual person who wants to get liberated, who wants to attain this truth, has to then practice every moment this practice has to continue. Just as, you know, for what something that you really want, you keep on thinking about it all the time. If a gentleman loses the job. Sri Ramakrishna has given this example. And these days in our area, you find lots of them that there is no job. Now, that person's whole consciousness, whole mind is in job. Whatever other things that person might be doing while eating, the thought of job. While doing the garden work, thought of job. Maybe listening to a music, still thought of God. Even if that person comes goes to the church, thought of job. That, oh Lord, may I get a job quickly, nice and good by your grace. And even if that person comes to the Vedanta class, maybe listening to Bhagavad Gita talk, but in the background, the thought of job goes on. Because it is really from heart that person is seeking it. And therefore, the mind is on that job all the time. It doesn't forget at all. Another example that Sri Ramakrishna gives is the toothache. If you have a pain in the tooth, if an aching tooth is terrible, that especially some of the teeth in the back, you know, the terrible pain. So if the tooth's ache is there, whatever, you may be working, you may be doing other things, but are constantly aware in the background of that toothache. So similarly, if this aspiration, if this desire for God realization is there, it always will be present in whatever thing that we are doing. So if this is the real aspiration, we will think of God every moment. Every moment it will go on. There is that beautiful book that I like to read every now and then, The Way of a Pilgrim. There is no name of the author, a Russian soldier, was retired from the army because of disability. And then was very sincere in his prayers and in his study of the Bible. So in the Bible he read that you must pray continuously to God. Pray continuously, unceasing prayer. You pray unceasingly. And he thought, we all read that, but we just take the poetic meaning of it unceasingly means maybe once a day or once a week will do. Once if I go on Sunday to the church, then on Sunday I may do a little prayer, and that should be enough. Unceasingly means don't drop it on every on Sundays. At least you do it. Don't give it up on Sundays. So, but this man said no. When Scripture has said that pray unceasingly, that is what they mean. But how can one pray unceasingly? You ought to give some time, say, for ablutions, for taking food, for other works. So he went to different teachers that how can this dictum in the scripture be actually practiced, and the scripture will not say something that is impractical or false. So how, what is the meaning of this? Because of his sincerity, he did not think that scripture nonsense. How much they write so many things, not real. He saw that there must be some meaning to it. That how can we unceasingly pray? And gradually that he got the answer to it. That whatever other things one may be doing, that prayer is going on continuously. So, that is what Lord means here. Sarveshu kaleshu, all the time, think of me and do your duty. Don't give it up at this stage of life. You have to keep on your duties. So, of course, a time comes in life when the duties fall off. And no duties, that when one starts getting liberated, the idea of duty also goes away. And one becomes free from any idea of duty. So, that comes to one's being in this manner. And then, in the 8th verse, he says that this practice, therefore, has to be carried on steadfastly. Abhyasa yoga yuktena cetasa nanyagamina paramam purusham divyam yati parthanu chintayan. With a mind that has taken to the way of constant practice and does not stray to anything else, one who thinks of the Supreme Divine Being attains to Him, O Partha. That therefore, abhyasa means practice. One has to put in practice for that. What appears to be very difficult through practice, that very thing becomes quite easy. Something appears to be so difficult, next to impossible, or just impossible. How can one realize God? Impossible. This we are continuously being buffeted in this duality. Even the idea of God means duality, I and God. How can then one realize that supreme oneness? It is not possible. But friends, and this thought, through practice, the things that appear impossible otherwise become meaningful. And we are so much, you know, deceived by what is visible that our logic also just goes on in circles within that visible. Just to give you an example, and those of you who do some account work, they must have had this experience many times. A very simple thing that to balance your accounts. Now, it is, you see that, well, the figures are not matching. What mistake did I make? Then, you check all the figures in your cash book, ledger book, in your bank, these things. What is happening? Why there is still $1.17 difference? And you say that, well, I have checked everything. It is not there. Now, as a simple this thing, that if it has to be there, it is, you can, the accounts have to match. If you have put everything on both sides, then there is impossibility that it will not match, and yet they don't match. After a while, it becomes such a frustrating thing. Oh, let me sleep. So you give it up. And then maybe after a few tries, you find that, oh, this is a silly mistake I made. Oh, that was bothering. How could I make that mistake? It was right there. It was right there, but not seen. So, therefore, what happens? That you feel it impossible, that I have seen everything, it is impossible. Well, put in proper efforts, put again and again, do it, and it will come up. You will get it, because that is the truth. That is the truth. Our when Swami used to tell, therefore, who had taught me how to do that account things. Not that I am expert in it, but some rudimentary knowledge I have. So he said, just a simple thing, you know. Remember, 2 and 2. If they 2 plus 2 become 4, it is 4. It can never become 5. Remember this simple thing. And so if you are getting 2 plus 2, 5, know that you are making some mistake. And then you will find out that mistake. So it is like that. If I am not able to see that God that pervades everything, well, then some mistake, you know. Some mistake is there. Try again and again, abhyasa, make efforts, and then the solution will emerge. That it is like that. You realize the truth. It is, so he says that ultimately you see that Paramam Purusham Divyam, that a divine being. It is called Purusha. The word Purusha in this common language, it means a man. But in this context, it means the one who resides in you. Purusha, the etymology of it is that the Puri Shayanat means, Puri means the town. The town and the resident in the town. This body is kind of a town. It is a town. I live in the body, in the town of this body. A nice description is there in some scriptures, like the old times, the town had many gates, walled cities, so they used to have gates. So this town also has 11 gates. That 11 gates, it is... What 11 gates? The 5, these organs and the mind. These organs, they are kind of, you know, the mind goes out of it. Our perception goes out of it, and then we see the world. Like one sees the different regions. Whatever we are seeing, really the mind is getting out of different sense organs. It goes out of the eye, and then it gets the form. The mind goes out of the ear, and it becomes sound. The mind goes out of the sense of smell, and then it becomes there some smell. So that is, our world is manufactured like that. So these are the doors or the gates of this city, and the indweller of that city, that is called Purusha. That Purusha, the indwelling reality, the indwelling self, is discovered through this practice. And how should this practice be? Practice means developing that single-pointedness, that the mind is getting scattered in all directions, so it is not able to get that power. The power, it is like if we have, say for example, the boiler to heat the space, heat water. So the heat has to get concentrated, and then it has to be focused on points that we want to be heated. Once I found that the boiler was on and no heat was coming here. And what happened? Then I saw, this happened a couple of years ago, that there was a hole in one of that ductwork there. All the that hot air was getting out of it. Then I put this simple American solution, put a duct tape, and then somebody recently told me that Americans have two solutions for every problem. If you want to join two things, there is duct tape, and when you want to separate two things, there is WD-40. So, with these two things, we solve all problems. So, it is this hot air going out, so it could not really be used to heat this room. So, all our energies, if they get frittered away like that, this practice of our perception of the self will not come to us. So that is the practice to develop this one-pointedness, the meditation. What is this meditation? To develop that sense of one-pointedness. It is how Sri Ramakrishna has given many beautiful examples to illustrate that. He said that if you want to put the thread into the eye of the needle, then if the thread has many shoots coming out, protruding here and there, then you will not be able to put that thread in the eye of the needle. So first you have to unite them all. Then if it is a single distinct thread, then you can put it inside. A single bread, you put it inside. That is how the mind, when it becomes single-pointed, then it realizes the truth. So, the efforts of meditation are actually that, as Patanjali describes in Yoga Aphorisms, that it is the one-pointedness, eka tattva abhyasaha, that by learning to focus the mind on one principle, and then that makes the energies of the mind concentrate. And when that concentration comes, our mind has infinite energy. But it gets frittered in a million directions. So we don't have much for our use. So when that concentration comes, then you get it. If you can concentrate a little bit, see, even our regular school studies, the more we can concentrate, the better becomes our learning. So, if we can concentrate our mind to this great extent, and that is not impossible, it is through practice that one can get it. So, it is said that one gets it, Partha Anuchintayan, that he says that Supreme Divine Being, and he attains to that Supreme Divine Being by a constant remembrance of that. It surely happens. There is no doubt about that. And then how to meditate? Well, the few verses afterwards, they describe that. We will just recite this verse and look at the meaning. The detailed discussion we shall postpone till next Friday. Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Anuraniyan Samanasmaredyah Sarvasya Dhataram Achintya Rupam Aditya Varnam Tamasaparastat. He who endowed with devotion meditates at the time of death. That is actually it has the meaning has been given combined for 9th and 10th verse because the verb comes at the end of the 10th verse. So what it means is that let us learn to meditate on something that is bright, something that is meritorious. Something that attracts our mind as the one who was there always, so Puranam. Then someone who is the governor of everything, Anushasitaram. Then Anuraniyam, the all-pervading but finest, the smallest, smaller than the atom. Smaller than the atom, because it is pervading the atom also, so has to be smaller than the atom to get into it. So it is smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest. So sarvasya dhataram, there it sends bigger, that the substratum of everything, like the ocean and the waves, substratum of all these. And achintya rupam, it cannot be just comprehended by our intellect, because our intellect also shines because of it. Aditya varnam, bright like sun, beyond all darkness. So, such images make it easier for us to think about it. We shall continue this discussion by the grace of God, next Friday. Any questions? Yes, George?
You know, you taught that at the time of death, the mind can be on guard. But how many people who die, their mind is on guard when they die?
Well, it is. I have not taken a statistics of it. His question is that how many people die taking the name of God? I have to run to the deathbed of every single person and hear. Well, what are you saying? But there is. I have seen some people at the time of death and dying. Reciting the name of God. So there are some, not that it is something that doesn't exist at all. There are some, and their lives therefore become a guideline. And let me tell you, not only monks, there are some householders with I was present when they breathed their last, or heard also from some others when they breathed their last, that yes, they were conscious at the time of death and recited the name of God, thought of God, and then calmly bid a goodbye to this body and the world that was related to this body. Yes, there are people like that. There are examples. Maybe I can think that I will become one of them. Is it not? if we practice steadfastly, we have a good chance of becoming one of them. But if we keep on postponing, not now, maybe later sometimes, or it is too boring or very tiresome, then, or bring up, you know, many other unnecessary doubts, then, of course, then we are shooting in our own foot, that's all.